Energy has them came away. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Keep your eye on the weather out there. It's hot as hell, but we have potential for some bad thunderstorms. Dave Murray is convalescing. He had back surgery. It all went very well, so he'll be back next week. We have our good friend Steve Ellman, the King of St. Charles. We have Chuck Summers, who is running in the primary against Ray Hartman on the Democrat side for U.S. Missouri District Number 2. The winner will take on Ann Wagner in the general, and he's with us. And Chuck, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jump right up there on the mic there, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
So I know that you are a retired plumber. I know you're a good, hard-working man, union guy. Tell us all about you and your campaign.
So I've been a union plumber for over 30-something years. Back in 2001, I was recruited to run for office, but due to family emergencies, I had to put my political aspirations on the back burner, focus on my family, my career. I did that, but I never quit thinking about running for office. Having a good pension and securing my retirement gave me the opportunity to do what I've been thinking about doing for the last 20 years, and that's running for office and representing working class people. Yes.
So you were just talking to Steve, who I consider a moderate Republican. You said you were a moderate Democrat,
yes.
And Steve said we'd probably agree on 90% of things, which is, that's what I love. That's what I wish the whole country was like.
Absolutely, and that's how you get back to democracy and representing the people and having those conversations and compromise. Compromise is not a dirty word.
Yeah. So what do you stand for? What are the most important two or three things?
So, like, my campaign is based on three tenets, and the first one is restoring rights, and that's restoring women's right to health care, contraception, IVF. The second one is middle-class tax cuts. You know, we are overtaxed, overburdened, and underrepresented. And then the third is climate change and extreme weather events. My niche is construction, and I've got a lot of ideas on not only how to rebuild our infrastructure better, but rebuild it smarter to address climate change and extreme weather events.
Yeah. What did being a union plumber for all those years do to help you if you had to Washington?
I think it's trained me to work with people, problem solve. When you're running work and you've got, you know, a crew of like 20 guys underneath you, you have to wear a bunch of different hats. You're a counselor, you got to console them, you got to get the best out of everybody, because everybody has something to give, and it's your job as a foreman to figure it out and then, you know, extract that out of them. So I think I can take all that. That's the mentality. You know, it was also a results-driven industry. You know, we had timelines, and we had to bring our jobs in on time. And I think I'll take that mentality to Washington with me too. Get things done.
Seems like unions are on the upswing.
They absolutely are. And seeing that's one thing that I love about the Harris administration is the PRO Act, which I will support when I get there, is going to rebuild unions. And unions built the middle class. And if we can go and rebuild unions all across this country, we can rebuild the middle class and give everybody a shot at the American dream.
So if you beat Ray, who's a friend of mine, and Ann Wagner's a tough putt. As you know, this is Missouri. How do you beat her? How do you get the independents?
So what my plan is to expand the voting base. And a lot of that is, I worked for a company for 20 years, and I quit working for them, and I went back to the hall. I said, put me out in the field. I want to field test my campaign. And I had a lot of good conversations with the workers in the field. Well, I want to go to the union halls and finish those conversations with the members. And then the second one is Gen X, Millennial, and Gen Z. They're the next largest voting bloc. And right now I'm saturating social media. I've got TikTok lives that I'm doing, that I'm talking to all the young kids and having those exchanges and those conversations and just turning people out to vote, because that's a dirty little secret about the second is we've got a low voter turnout. And that's a shame, because we are a representative democracy, and it only works when you have voter participation.
Yeah.
So it's my job to get voters out, and they love the message. So I'm trying to get them turned out with the message.
Seems like a guy you could work with, Steve.
Yeah, when you get there, if you get there, my advice would be meet the people on the other side of the aisle. Get to know them. Because what you're going to find out is there's going to be two or three issues that you'll never agree on. But you're going to find there's five or six or seven that you can really work with other people on. And I think that's the key to being successful. The problem is today, nobody comes home and brags about their success. Nobody brags about the bill they passed or the tax cut they sponsored or everything. Just come back and say how we're fighting. Man, I'm fighting, you know. Now, I'm not getting anything done because while I'm fighting, I'm making enemies.
Not
nobody will work with me. But by golly, I'm fighting for you. And I think we've got to get beyond that in both parties.
Absolutely. Before COVID hit, I was going to get a talk show together. It was called Conversation Forum. Mm-hmm. And basically what it was is I was going to get four Democrats, four Independents, and four Republicans, get everybody in a room and just have a conversation, because we have a lot more in common that we have that divides us. And if you sit down and just have, you know, honest conversations with people, you find that out. And I'm going to have those same conversations in Washington.
Well, you're not going to be involved as much as I am in Washington, but the issue that I used to agree with almost all Democrats when I was in Jeff City 25 years ago was law and order.
Yes.
And I still think the more traditional Democrats and the more traditional Republicans, there's a lot we can work on together when it comes to law and order. And I just think that's really important to this region. Well, We get some of those crime under control.
Well, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And if you want to turn around the big cities and get people coming back to where they feel safe, it's going to take somebody like having, you know, the cops on the beat. You know, when you see a police officer on that street corner, you know, chances are there's not going to be nothing going down. So, yeah we need to have police officers visible. And I know my daughter was an officer, and she in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah.
But, just having police on the street and having them visible will bring back our cities. Yeah, make people feel safe.
Yeah, Mike Kehoe was on Total Information AM this morning, and Aki asked him, what is your number one issue? And it surprised me. He said it's crime. It wasn't China. It wasn't abortion. It was crime.
It's definitely crime for this region. And even though most of that crime is in the city, it affects us all, because the reputation that the city has ends up being the reputation the whole region has.
Well, the city is the heartbeat of your state.
Everybody's so proud of the city when we have successes in baseball or hockey or our art museum or zoo or whatever. We're all so proud of that. But we live with the good, but we also have to live with the bad. And I know I've got just a couple years left. If I can do anything to help get crime under the control in the city, not just for to eliminate the tragedies that occur in the neighborhoods, but just to give us a better reputation around the country and around the world, that this is a good place to move your family, to move your business, and get this whole region growing again.
What do you guys think, and Chuck, do me a favor, get right up there on that mic. You have a great voice. What do you think the middle ground is between Republicans who seem, and I'm painting with a very broad brush here, but on crime seem to think it's all about cops on the beat and crime and punishment, and on the left it's no, people are disenfranchised and marginalized and we need to build more basketball courts, we need to have more youth centers and things like that. They're both important. Where's the middle ground? How do we do both these things, Chuck?
So I think it's a little bit of both. And I think on the officer side, what I want is I want a more educated police force. Like I said, I was telling you earlier off the show that my daughter just got her master's degree in clinical psychology. You would not believe how much that helped her while she was being an officer on the street. And I'd like to see a program where we could pay our officers to go out and get a sociology degree, psychology degree. And because, you know, the left talks about wanting to have a social worker with the officers. Well, why not have it all in one? Have that officer prepared not only to do the one task, but have him, you know, mentally prepared to address a situation that he walks into. So I think it's a combination of both, and that's how I would address it.
In St. Charles County, our police work with social workers and mental health workers already. Now, you have this program that we're working on at East West Gateway, and it wants to hire social workers to go into neighborhoods to meet with potential criminals and have a police officer go with them and present them with an alternative. Hey, we can help you go straight here, but if you don't, then the police officer is going to take over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine, except you're taking another police officer off the street mm-hmm. to do that. And down at East West Gateway, I'm open-minded about the social workers. Let's see if it can't hurt anything, but we can't do it if it means taking even more officers off the street. And I offered an amendment that said that East West Gateway couldn't hire a police officer until the city of St. Louis hired.
I remember that.
East West Gateway couldn't hire a social worker until St. Louis hired 10 police officers. And I got all kinds of pushback from the progressives. Megan Green asked me, so you're telling me that that police officers are 10 times more important than social workers? I said, no, I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you we need 10 times more police officers and social workers. Well, I don't. I said, let's try this. Send my amendment back. I sent another amendment in. I had a one for one. It's all you had to do is hire one more police officer when you hired a social worker. And I couldn't get them to vote for that either. So I'm open-minded about the social workers, but that by itself is not going to fix anything. We need more police officers to get the bad drivers off the street, to get the unlicensed cars off the street, the unlicensed drivers off the street, and put the murderers and hard criminals in jail.
Agreed. Yeah, we need to work together.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a middle ground? I know you're for reproductive rights. Another tough putt in Missouri. Is there a middle ground on abortion, or is it one of those three things you talked about, Steve, that when you get to Washington, there's going to be a few things that you just don't agree on?
I think that the majority of people in Missouri are pro-life with exceptions. But that's not one of the choices. The legislature has a very strict pro-life with no exceptions, and now we have on the ballot is going to be something which is the other extreme. And I'm not sure which one's going to win, but I think the majority of the people would probably rather see something in the middle.
Yeah, you know, my daughter served almost 10 years in the Navy, and she has less rights than her mother has. And that's a personal decision, I believe. This is my thoughts on it. That's a personal decision that should be between the mother, father, and the doctor. No politician, no citizen, no judge, anybody should have a say in that. Miracle is a birth, and there is nobody on this planet that can tell you all the complications that can come up during birth. And I was there for both of my children. And, you know, you shouldn't have to be in a situation like that and then have to go call a politician or a judge to see if, you know, you can perform the procedure. You know, we have people in like Utah that are being flown by helicopter out of their state to another state to perform that medical procedure. And you tell me, wasting taxpayer dollars, does that even make sense?
Well, let me give you the other extreme. What about prosecutors who have taken an oath to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state of Missouri who are refusing to prosecute people under the abortion statute that the state has?
Going to take a quick break here. It is the Think Tank. As always, you guys can always call in if you have a thought on something the gentlemen say. You want to take it in a different direction. 314-436-7900-DGS.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. Tomorrow, if we're on, it'll be very short because the Cardinals have like a 1:15 game. Same thing on Friday. It's kind of a weird week for us. Works out for me with the arrangements for my mom. Thanks again for being patient and supportive when it comes to that. Think Tank, we have our buddy Steve Ellman. We have Chuck Summers, who is running against Ray Hartman in the 2nd Congressional District primary. If he wins, he'll take on Ann Wagner, which, as we've said, she's pretty ensconced here. And Chuck, how do you plan to take her on?
So what I want to do is I'm going to expand the voting base. I'm going to go to the union membership. I've been a union plumber for over 30-something years. I quit the job that I was working on to go out in the field and have conversations with the workers in the field. I'm going to take those conversations to the membership and then expand the base by going after Gen X, Millennials, and Gen Z. They don't get involved in our political system. We're a representative democracy. It doesn't work unless everybody participates. So I'm messaging to them, and I'm going to try and get those voters to turn out. So expanding the voter base.
We had a really interesting discussion, Steve and Chuck did, on the breaks about abortion and about climate change. I like your approach to climate change because usually it's we have 10 years until we're all underwater, or it's a hoax and there's nothing to it and it's just that we're a planet and it's the sun. And you take a very practical, pragmatic, working guy approach to it.
Yeah, it's rebuilding our infrastructure. You know, the Biden administration did great things on allocating money to rebuild our infrastructure. He wants to build it back better. I want to build it back smarter. I want to rebuild our infrastructure to address climate change and extreme weather events, like pumping flooded waters from flooded areas to drought-stricken areas, piping water to, you know, to help go to water towers to saturate areas where we're having all the wildfires now. So there's just, my niche is construction because I come from a construction background. And yeah, that's what I will take to Washington and address climate change and extreme weather events.
It just happened. I mean, it's still kind of happening at the moment. But what were your thoughts on Biden stepping aside and Kamala taking over?
I think Biden just secured his spot as one of the greatest presidents in history by making that move. He walked away from something that he actually earned because he has a historical presidency his first 4 years. And do that selfless act and pass the torch over to the next generation, I think secured his spot in history as one of the greatest presidents.
Steve, were you surprised like I was that he stepped aside? Didn't think he had a choice?
Didn't think he had much of a choice. What are you
going
to say?
That's the way it's going. Think it's someone described what's going on with Kamala right now as a sugar rush? Do you think that's true, or do you feel like she has some staying power?
I think that remains to be seen. Yeah, she's going to get a bump right now. Everybody's kind of excited. That's what they're talking about. Be interesting to see how the tactics of the Trump people change.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly got a whole different scenario now.
I think Trump is going to have to find another gear. The making up silly names for people and being mean has worked for him in the past. I think it's kind of falling on deaf ears for everyone outside of the MAGA nation. I think he's going to have to find another gear to beat her.
Yeah, I think he'll have to probably brush up on his debating skills mm-hmm. a little bit at this point. Again, I think everybody's going to be waiting to see how progressive Harris is, mm-hmm. Because Biden was not a progressive. I mean, he was more of a traditional
Democrat.
He was
more
Democrat, of a moderate. And that's why they ran him 4 years ago, because they wanted to move towards the middle a little bit. And of course, she was part of that administration. Is that where she's going to stay? Or is she going to go with some of this crazy progressive stuff? And, she's going to have to be very careful, because I think she'll alienate a lot of people in the middle if she starts doing the sort of thing that Cori Bush and some of the progressives have been doing in Washington.
I agree. I thought Trump snatched possible defeat from the jaws of victory when he failed to pivot. The guy gets shot in the ear. He had all the reason in the world to pivot. All of his people would have gone right with him. He wouldn't have lost a single vote.
He's had two opportunities. When Biden was struggling in that debate, and it was obvious after the first 10 or 15 minutes, if he'd have been smart, he'd have said, hey, this guy's doing my job for me. I just need to be presidential. I might actually pick up a few people who are undecided.
Agreed.
But he didn't. He still had the same approach he planned on having. And at the convention, he started out his speech at the convention. It was good speech.
Yeah.
And it was presidential. And if he'd ended right there, people might have said, yeah, he's changed. But instead, he just went on and on with the same kind of approach that some of his supporters really like, but I think a lot of people in the middle just can't buy.
Chuck, what do we have, 30, 60 seconds here? Take 1 minute to give your sales pitch and tell people where they find out more about you.
So, yeah, my name is Chuck Summers, and I'm running for Congress in Missouri's 2nd Congressional District. And if you go to summersforcongress.com, that's Summers, the number 4, congress.com, you can check out my website. I've got, it'll take you to all my social media platforms, too, because I've got content on every site. Got a TikTok Live going on to get to the Gen X, Millennials, and Gen Z. We need everybody to turn out and vote, because this is one of the most critical elections in your lifetime. And in order for our democracy to work, we have to have everybody vote and participate.
All right. Thank you. Good luck to you. Maybe next time I see you, you'll be taking on Ann Wagner. Steve, thank you, my friend, as always.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. Happy Tuesday, DGS on KMOX. 4:40, otherwise known as 20 minutes left in the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, can you tell I've been quiet?
Oh, Wheels is just tied to Twitter.
I mean, well, that and my phone is buzzing nonstop, too. But, there's nothing new on the Dylan Carlson front that we hadn't already mentioned. Like, there's no new rumor. There's nothing like that. But I'd be floored if he's not traded.
Yeah,
I'd be
shocked.
There's
just no room at the end.
Well, they need a reliever, right? Well, and that's one guy that other teams, I mean, it's been reported by national reporters, Mark Feinsand from MLB.com and a few others, that there are multiple teams that see value in Dylan Carlson, and they don't want to give up a top prospect for him. They're not going to give you a starting pitcher, but they probably give you a rental reliever, which is something they need. They need a relief pitcher to add to just to help cover so much of the work that they've had. So I'd be shocked if it doesn't happen between now and five. But keep in mind, sometimes these things get done, but they don't get announced until after the deadline because it's all got to be processed by the commissioner's office.
I see.
So it could be in the next 19 minutes, but it might be a little after that before you actually hear it.
So the deal has to be done by five.
It has to be submitted to the commissioner's office by five. But it does not have to be announced by then to be a real deal.
What reasons? Does it ever happen that the commissioner says no?
They could. Like, there are certain rules you have to follow, right? I mean, like, if a player's injured, the injuries have to be disclosed. It can't be, like, surprise, whatever. There's a certain amount of money that's acceptable to be sent. And that's basically what the approval is. If it's just player for player, the league's going to sign off on it. But, you know, when it comes to the amount of cash or that type of thing being moved, they have to sign off to make sure it's okay.
So is there a player for the Nationals that we're looking at that we know about that they're having discussions?
The name that's been floated is a right-handed pitcher named Dylan Floro, who's been kind of a setup man, part-time. He closed a little bit for the Marlins for a couple years. But he's basically a setup type guy, and he's having a good year, 2-something ERA, not a strikeout guy. He's a pitch to contact, don't walk people kind of guy, but 33-year-old veteran who can slot in and hold, you know, definitely hold his own in the 6th, 7th inning without much issue.
And Ricky Horton said that if it were up to him, he would do a 6-man rotation for a couple of rotations and then get out of it.
So we do have a plan now. Like earlier we were talking about how we didn't know what was going on because it was reported by a couple of people, Katie Wu and John Denton, that Mike McGreevy was going to start tomorrow. That would be his major league debut. He was one of the Cardinals' advanced prospects at Memphis. He was a first-round pick in 2021. But he hadn't made his major league debut yet. He's really struggled at the upper levels of the minors. He's gotten hit hard, but it's been a little better of late. He's going to start tomorrow instead of Sonny. Sonny's going to start Thursday in Chicago.
And do you read into that?
I mean, they're just buying him an extra day. It's just, it's like my reaction to it was it's a little weird given how important every game is right now. And with Fetty jumping into the rotation, there's going to be a natural spot to go extra day for him after Fetty jumps in instead of now, but they're doing it now. So it looks like Sonny Gray will go Thursday. Eric Fetty will start Friday in his first start for the Cardinals. And I think it's Gibson after that on Saturday in Chicago. So
what do you picture going on at Cardinals headquarters right now?
Oh, I mean, probably doing exactly what I've been doing. Except instead of, like, I'm joking, I'm like refreshing Twitter nonstop and all that. I'm sure that they've got multiple text conversations going. I don't know exactly how they, I'm guessing there's phone calls going on too. So Mo will be doing a lot of it. Mike Gersh, I'm sure, is a part of all of that too, because they have more than one person, because they're tracking more than one team. I'm sure they're not just with one team. I'm sure they probably have 3, 4, 5 teams that they're having conversations with now to see where the best deal will pop in.
I have a question. Why is it that with, like, pretty much all sports, it seems like a lot of trade deals do come down to the wire at the deadline? Like, why is that not, like, 2 weeks before the deadline you were having these discussions?
Why do high school students wait till the last minute to do their homework or study for a test?
Is it that simple?
It is. It really is. Deadlines spur the action, right? If a team thinks they could squeeze out a better deal or get a better player for the players they're willing to give up, they'll wait as long as they have to find out whether or not they can. So a lot of it is that, but some of it too is dominoes, right? It's a game of dominoes. So one of the guys that people have been waiting on a trade on has been Tanner Scott, who was the closer for the Marlins. And he didn't get traded until just a little while ago. He got sent to the Padres. Well, that sets off a chain reaction because all the teams that were in on him are now out on him, and they're going to move on to choices number 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's part of what delays it all, is if one guy that five teams really want is still available, they're going to wait. And then once they learn their fate on that deal, they'll move on to others, which is why you see all that action.
So no one thinks that Dylan Carlson will be a part of the Cardinals post 5 p.m., but if he is, someone's got to go, right? I mean, now that we have Pham.
Yeah, there's a reason why, like, Pham is here. They're expecting him. I saw the reports from the ballpark that he's expected to be activated for tonight, but that has not happened yet, and there's no lineup for tonight's game yet either, because they're not sure exactly what it's going to look like. But yeah, Dylan Carlson will be traded before that. I'd be shocked if it wasn't that, because somebody on the roster has to go. Could they send down a pitcher and make that room? They could, but I think it's pretty clear that this is Dylan Carlson, whether it's going to the minor leagues or moving off to another team. Seems pretty obvious that's the move.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.